Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Michael McDaniel. Give you a little background. I actually am a webmaster and IT manager for most unlikely places, a megachurch down in Columbus, Georgia, which actually provides an interesting perspective on this sort of thing. My talk today is about cookies, web bugs, adware, and spyware, different technologies that marketing companies and other companies are using to track your online habits. Basically, like sticking a radio collar on you and classifying you and categorizing you. Not something I'm a fan of. We're going to start off with cookies today. And it's just ironic because actually last week, four of my coworkers asked me what cookies actually were. So it's a very timely topic, apparently. All a cookie really is, just a simple little text file, and HTTP, the protocol behind the web, doesn't have any way of remembering you. It's like a short order chef. You give them an order, an hour later you give them an order from the same person, chef has no way of knowing it's from that person. That's why they call it a stateless protocol. All the cookie does is returns the value to the website so it can remember you. Like, let's say you log into Yahoo, right? It'll actually remember your username and even your password if you want. And that's how cookies are used for good. And this is an autopsy of a cookie. You actually have a name of the cookie and its value. And the value is what was returned to the website. You have an expiration date, basically time of life. Could be the end of the session, so when you close the browser, it's through. Could be next week. Could be 1,000 years from now. And the valid path of it is relates to the website as well as the domain. So it only returns a value for that domain. And the last section needs a secure connection, simple true or false value. And that basically means it needs an SSL connection to work so it can transmit securely. And simple pros are websites can remember your username and can be personalized, like my news on CNN or the equivalent. Cons, if they're used incorrectly, they can be used to track what websites you visit, which gives you a pretty good idea of what you're actually going to. If you look through your cookie list, you'll actually see username at website, and it's a fairly complete list because just about every website uses cookies these days. And if you have a company like DoubleClick.net involved, they'll actually track your buying habits and compile into a database and sell it to anybody who gives them money. Which they've actually been getting into a lot of trouble about that. And if someone is very bad at writing cookies, they'll actually take your credit card number if you buy it from their online store and store your credit card number that's unencrypted and available to anyone who knows how to look for it. And because a lot of these cookies will take your information and send it to various companies without your consent or notification, a lot of them do violate the Federal Trade Commission's fair information principles. Next are web bugs. All web bugs really are is a graphic that's part of a web page. It doesn't have to contribute to the formatting of the web page. Could be a 1x1 GIF, but usually it's transparent. Or it could be one of the pictures on the actual website. So pretty much any graphic is suspect. And this actually gets more details than a cookie. You can actually get your actual IP address at the time, when the document was viewed, which in this case, document is a web page, but, and also what type of browser you're using. I didn't find much information as to whether if you're using Mozilla, pretending to be Internet Explorer, would it report as Internet Explorer. probably is Internet Explorer, but you can never be sure. And your actual email address, because a lot of people have their personal profile set up in the browser, and even something as simple as what monitor, what resolution you have on your monitor. Some sites actually will change their web page for your resolution. That's one positive way you could use a web bug. And the pros can actually get a better idea of what viewers are clicking versus just looking at. Because if you click on it, the web bug, it'll actually keep track of that. And if you want general statistics about your visitors to your site, that's one way. A web bug is the easy way of doing that. And if you keep good enough records, you can actually tailor the ads you have on your site to your visitors. So, bless you. And so if you, let's say you're going to a hunting goods website, and so you're not displaying things for makeup and jewelry, per se, just too complete. Someone usually wouldn't see on there. And if it's embedded in the HTML document, you can actually keep track of who is actually looking at that web page. So if you, let's say you have a confidential document that you have saved on a disk and it gets outside your company, it'll actually track who is actually taking a look at it because it's calling a graphic on your server, which I thought was a fairly clever way of dealing with that, because the only way to get around that is to look at the source code without ever opening up the actual page or editing out that one graphic. Since most people wouldn't think to do that, that's a fairly clever way to make sure your documents are confidential, or at least you know who was causing trouble for you. And of course, there's a lot of cons. You know those spam emails you get that are done in HTML? These web pages just have all sorts of things on there. If they have a web bug in there, you can actually, you're actually reporting to them that you read the email, and therefore your email is valid, and you do read that your email. So that basically just makes you a more visible target for spam. And you can also end up getting your email address associated with your IP address. So not only do they know where to email you, they start getting an idea of where you are. And another problem is, let's say someone puts a cookie from DoubleClick on your computer. Anyone else who is a valid domain for DoubleClick, since DoubleClick sells, I'd say, about 80% of internet advertising, mostly those banner ads, pretty much any company out there is a valid domain for them. And so they can get your cookie ID and all your browsing habits for any other company. Needless to say, DoubleClick is not exactly a fan of most people these days. But I'm sorry, Mike. my last point is valid for both cookies and web bugs. Basically, what they're most interested in is what other websites you've been going to. Basically, anything that's none of their business, they want to make it their business so they make money off you. Of course, they don't send you any of that money, but that's how it goes. And a couple of solutions to this are, there's certain programs that will actually block banner ads, which usually end up blocking web bugs as a result. There's also specialized programs that actually handle web bugs on their own. And one odd thing about web bugs is, if you have cookies turned off, there's no way for the web bug to actually make a report, because basically the web bug takes the information and the cookie will actually be returning the value to the server. And another way of handling this is using anonymous browsing services, which will strip out all your information and make sure your IP address and your email address are not associated with it. And our next stop is adware. Basically, adware is, you download a free program and it's got a little banner ahead running in the bottom. One example would be, let's say, ICQ. They mainly just have ICQ-related ads, but that's technically advertising. And less obvious are things like Bonsai Buddy and Gator, which you download it, and they have, you know, advertisements and other things. But they also load a lot of spyware on your machine, and we'll cover spyware in the next section. The reason I put Bonsai Buddy on there is that I used to work for tech support in Earthlink, right? And people would call about Bonsai Buddy constantly, and they'd have all these strange programs running in the background. They'd ask me what they were, and it would destroy their machine, cause it to lock up constantly. And of course, they always blamed some guy on the phone they've never met. But that's how it goes. There are some pros. Well, only one real pro for adware I've ever been able to find is if a software author wants to make more money than just shareware hoping someone will donate, in theory they can make more money. But to be honest with you, most of the companies that only rely on advertising have gone out of business. Like, does anyone remember the pay 50 cents an hour for having a banner ad across the bottom of your screen? I can't even remember the name of those companies. I used to have an account with two of them on an old machine of mine just to see if it worked. Got a $20 check, but that's about it. And of course, there are lots of cons. Adware almost always has spyware bundled along with it. And so, unlike cookies and web bugs, where you actually have to go to the website or look at a web page, this will actually constantly track you all the time, even if you're not online. And it'll constantly download new ads to refresh itself, and that can slow down your bandwidth. And it can also slow down your computer. It's just constantly churning and doing things that, well, really, you really don't want it to do. And some adware can even damage your entire operating system, like Bonsai Buddy. And it's also, earlier versions of Bonsai Buddy were extremely hard to remove. Few things scarier than editing the registry with someone over the phone. And there's certain types of adware which will actually, the way they advertise is they'll give certain web pages priority when you're using a search engine, or they'll highlight certain links in yellow or red to get your attention. And of course, these links are actually sponsors that paid them to do this. So it's not like as bad as Back Orifice, where someone can control your keystrokes and do everything else, but it's basically affecting your web browsing experience and doing what you don't want it to do. And finally, spyware. All spyware is basically software that actually keeps track of what you're doing and when you're doing it, and can give detailed reports to the original author or the website you download it from, what they call the mothership. Since these programs are pretty alien to your system, that makes a good analogy. So basically, after it gets this information, it sends data to the servers of the intended recipient, which uses your bandwidth without your permission, of course. And different type of spyware is something the public can actually buy. Basically, a spouse will want to keep a track on their husband, make sure to not have any cyber affairs. Employers will keep track of their employees. And just basically, it's monitoring software and runs in the background, and they try to make it very hard to find. Now, there are some pros to this if used properly. There's certain companies where all transactions and communications have to be fully logged, like certain stockbroker firms, that sort of thing. Basically, they want to make sure they're above board so they're not accused of insider trading or anything like that. At least that's what a broker in Buckhead told me. And employers, if they have some reason, feel like they have the reason to, they can check their employees' productivity and make sure that they're doing their job and not looking at surfing web pages all day. And parents can use it to monitor their children. Many parents are hysterical about AOL chat rooms. There's been a few highly publicized cases about, you know, children talking to some stranger in a chat room. They go get on a bus to meet them. They're never heard from again. And of course, there are many cons to this. Basically, it's getting all sorts of information about you that you didn't tell it, and you didn't give permission to tell the stranger everything about you. And these programs, since they're constantly monitoring the background, and they're constantly running a log, can actually slow your computer down, make it less stable. Because a lot of these programs aren't really well written, and they can usually are bloated and take up a lot of memory. And even if you find it and uninstall it manually, it may leave junk files all over your hard drive, and can also leave leftovers in the registry. And what the registry is basically, Windows had this idea of one gigantic file full of settings. And the problem is that if you corrupt this registry file, you have to reinstall Windows from scratch. But unfortunately, everything in the world writes to the registry. So unfortunately, you have to go through and manually remove registry keys, and that's not the easiest thing to do for a lot of people. Because even if you really have to know what you're doing, and sometimes one computer will have the registry written one way, another will have it written a different way for the exact same program. And of course, we have solutions. Adware programs, there's always alternatives to them that don't use adware. I mean, you have freeware, you have shareware, and so basically I'd recommend using those, because most of the adware I've been forced to use for this program or that program for work and different jobs, it's always slowed the computer down, it's always made it less stable, and if you set up a firewall, it's interesting what kind of information they try to send out. But there are spyware-specific programs that can be run. XCleaner is one program I ran across. At work, we actually managed about 40 computers for that megachurch I mentioned, actually used adware. On average, there was 40 spyware components on each computer, because people were running Kazaa and BearShare and other things, and Kazaa is extremely bad about spyware. They had to get their money somewhere. But the computer I inherited from my predecessor had 80 components. I'm not sure what all he was running, and I don't want to know. Oh, if you inherit a job from someone else and get their computer, reinstall it the computer from scratch whenever possible. Because if he got let go, he may not have done that good a job with the computer, may have damaged it. And as for avoiding company spyware and monitoring programs, just assume that everything you do on the computer is public, because legally it is their computer, their property, and if you do anything questionable with it, they're usually going to win the case. I mean, I could be wrong, there might be some counter cases, but you might eventually win the suit, but you lose your job in the process most of the time. A lot of companies don't keep employees around that stir up trouble, even if it's not really their fault. You know, companies don't like to take responsibility or liability. And as for your home computer, try to keep it secure. You know, don't allow every person in the house to have administrative or root access. And you know, try to be careful about programs you install, because just about with any program, if you just do a Google search or the equivalent, there are chat boards to talk about it, and there are many people out there that dissect and reverse engineer programs, so you know exactly what it does and who wrote it a lot of the time. And if you really want security, setting up a limited user account for other users on your computer is a good idea. But I would also recommend startup passwords, so at the very least they'll slow them down enough that if someone's trying to get in your computer, you find them there and you start wondering, what are they doing there? So a lot of times spouses will install programs that will spy on their loved ones to figure out if they're having an affair or not. But for something like that, I'd recommend counseling instead. If there's already mistrust there, then using a program is just going to make it worse. And these are the various sources I have, but that's a lot to write down. So if anyone gives me their email address, I can email them a copy of my presentation. But the main spyware I ran across was SpectreSoft. Not only does it check your email, it also checks your web-based email and your chat logs, like AOL, ICQ, MSN. Tracks it all automatically. Pretty scary, actually. Appropriate that they call it Spectre. And we should have a few minutes for questions. Okay, over there. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait for the microphone. Just make it easier for our web listeners.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I've disabled cookies before, but when I've visited certain sites, it says, we will not allow access until you've enabled cookies. Is there a way around it, or am I missing something?
There are different settings you can have. You can say, basically, instead of disallowing all cookies, you can actually set it so it'll ask you if you want to set a cookie. That's a setting I use because some sites I trust and some sites I don't. I mean, if I go to some strange site which should not be asking me for cookies, then I'll disallow cookies. But, well, the problem is, a lot of designers out there, they want cookies, they want information, so they just refuse to let you use their website. Or they don't realize that, maybe they don't want cookies, maybe they don't want to be tracked and categorized and sliced up that'd be sold off to marketing companies. But does that answer the question adequately? The irony is to tell a website not to send you cookies, you have to use a cookie because HTTP is not designed for saving information, just serves up pages mainly. Yes, sir.
Is there a difference between browsers in terms of security that you can attain with them, Explorer versus Navigator, for example?
Well, Explorer, unfortunately, is not really that secure. They put out patches for it constantly, but the thing is, Internet Explorer is like, was it 95-98% of the market out there? And the vast majority of people are going to be trying to break into that. So the other browsers, you don't hear as many problems for them, so either they could be more secure or they could be just less market share, so not as many people bother to try to break into it. So could be a combination of both. But
I've been using Navigator just because I thought I don't hear about as many problems with it, and you assume that Microsoft has put in a whole bunch of backdoors, and whenever you hear about a problem with Explorer, it's simply somebody discovering one or more of their backdoors. Mm-hmm. And is it rational to use Navigator, and nowadays, is it still a viable browser?
Well, I've used Navigator quite a bit, but unfortunately, a lot of web designers these days use Internet Explorer. All they do is code is Internet Explorer. Just if there's a site you like, just tell them that they need to conform to web standards, not Microsoft standards, because really shouldn't be letting one company dictate what the net does, because that's one of their strategy. Every market they always take the standards, change it, and twist it. And then you're expected to be their puppet. Oh, I have a bit of an anti-Microsoft bias. I mean, fixing their fixing their junk after a year and a half of tech support when they won't even answer the phones to text for their tech support, you tend to get a little bitter. Oh, yes, that is true. Mozilla and Opera can masquerade as Internet Explorer, and the browsers have evolved to the point. So unless Microsoft comes out with more standards that break everything else, just about any browser out there will read most websites these days. But Mozilla has the most active development that I've seen. Yes, sir.
Two quick questions. Could you explain a little bit more about how web bugs work? You said that when you load the picture, does it then attempt to set a cookie on your computer? And my second question is, how can you get it so your browser will not send your email address through a web bug?
Well, I'll go with the easier one first. Well, basically, Internet Explorer and others have these profiles you fill out. You know, your name, your email address, your address. Never fill out the address on those. In fact, I would, for the name, I usually put none of, and then last name is your business. Usually I put just a goofy email address like, biteme@devnell.com. No, my luck, that's an actual email address, so my apologies to that person. But, well, basically, WebBug, there's been some conflicting information out there, and some of my sources say that the fact that the very act of loading a web bug from a server will tell the server what, like, who downloaded that picture and when. Basically, your web logs for if you're running a website. Other sources say that if you disable cookies, it can't return the information. So basically, the connection between web bugs and cookies is the web bug gets the information and the cookie returns it. There's probably web bugs are probably written both ways. It really depends on who's writing the code. Does that answer your question?
Do you know about adware and spyware for Macintosh computers and if there's a program like an adware equivalent for Macintosh computers that you could use to remove those programs?
Unfortunately, I'm not quite as familiar with Macintoshes. I supported them for quite a while, and I can set them up with internet connections just fine. I'm actually in the thinking about getting a Macintosh next month, but I think Adaware handles Macintosh. It doesn't? Okay. Well, the first couple of times I downloaded it, it started off in German, so I didn't have a chance to read all the options sometimes. But that language feature is easy to change over to English, by the way. I would do is look for like ad blocking and spyware remover for Macintosh. Just put that into a search engine. My personal favorite is Google. I'm sure that someone's written equivalent for it. But nothing there. I mean, nothing out there on the net.
I've searched, but I couldn't find anything that would be Mac compatible. Like all the programs that I could find were written for Windows.
I'll need some time to figure that one out. So give me your email address after the talk. I'll see if I can find out.
Does Norton have anything for Mac?
They've got antivirus and firewall. Yeah. So, one good solution is to have a personal firewall running, because a lot of these attempts will go through some strange ports and other things, but the firewall is just good general practice.
Hi there. I run Zone Alarm Pro, and the thing I get the pop up. I allow this executable to access the internet. Do you know of any resources? Because I'm not gonna start trying to track down what executable it is and what program it is when some of the stuff is Windows-based. Do you know of any resources that are good for looking up information like that?
Let's see. One good website is spywareinfo.com. Let me just double Let me just double check on that. Oh, goodness. Left click and right click got mixed up. Spywareinfo.com and scumware.com are two good ones. But usually they keep lists of programs that are known to be adware with spyware built in. But in general, if you're not telling it to go to the internet and it's trying to get internet access, I usually disallow it, because unless I'm using the FTP client or something, I'm specifically going to the internet. It has no business going on the internet. But I like to have control of my computer. That's all.
I was wondering, what's the best way to restore system integrity and make sure the information is completely off the computer? I know AOL is really bad. You install the internet connection software, and it kicks other ones off. And I've gone through and uninstalled it, and there's still files. If you go through find files, mm-hmm. and if you put in AOL, there'll still be all kinds of junk on the hard drive. Is there any way of making sure that all that's removed, like FBI style, like it never existed?
The absolute best thing is to reinstall Windows, which I recommend doing that regularly anyway. I mean, mine breaks down every year or two, because, you know, even the mini computer, when you first buy it, the factory installed version has got all sorts of junk and, you know, Family Photo Center and programs you never use. And I reinstalled my Windows for the first time, it booted up 2 minutes faster. But a less drastic way is, I've actually removed AOL a few thousand times, literally. But one way of taking care of the best way of taking care of it is getting out of going to the control panel and networks, because usually there's AOL protocols running even when you uninstall it. If you get rid of it there, that usually will take care of most of your problems. The rest of it's going to the registry, so if you start working the registry, make a full backup before you do anything, of course. But there's certain specific websites out there that you tell it which version of AOL you got stuck with, and they'll tell you which reg keys to remove. But usually the registry just gets a little slower when you have a bunch of junk in there, but occasionally the entire registry file will get corrupted. And that's a design flaw of Windows, because that's a major choke point. Basically, that one point of vulnerability, got to reinstall it pretty much. But I would keep up regular backups of your data, because the only way to really be sure is to format and reinstall.
And that restores integrity when you mm-hmm. reinstall Windows?
When you format completely and reinstall, yes, because basically you're cleaning out the accumulated junk, because programs a lot of people don't write very good uninstall procedures, even if they're being perfectly honest and legitimate.
Okay. And the other thing is, second question I have, when you run Maintenance Wizard, does that help in any way with your dial-up speed for the old modems, like a 14.4 or 28.8, if that's all you can? Sometimes if I go to my brother's house and I don't bring my computer and I use his, I get a slow connection speed. I was wondering, what's the easiest way to make sure that's as efficient as possible, running as fast as it can?
So the fastest dial-up speed you can get? Well, since I used to do dial-up tech support, it's actually right up my alley. Well, basically, there's a few things that'll slow down the computer. Programs running in the background, like, you know, adware, which is sucking up your bandwidth. That's actually a minor factor. Another factor is sometimes the modem drivers will get corrupted. And if you're using generic modem drivers from Windows, it's basically it's making a guess on how to use your hardware, and it's not the most efficient way of doing it. So updating your modem drivers, I've seen increases of 5 to 10K sometimes. But the one factor that's slowing down the modem speed are the lines. There's noise on the phone lines, and we can't hear it half the time, but computer talks a lot faster than we do. You know, phone lines were never designed for transmitting data. And the fact that they got up to a 56K standard is a miracle of computer engineering, to be honest with you. But as for modems themselves, these software-based WIN modems are junk. It costs like a buck or two to make at most, it drains your CPU resources. You're better off with a hardware-based modem, to be honest with you, because you have a dedicated processor chip for that.
And is there anywhere you can download a new BIOS that's more efficient?
You mean BIOS for the whole computer? Well, there's only a few manufacturers. You got your AMI, Phoenix, and I can't remember which else, but that's like the majority of the market right there. Usually you can go to their website and download what you need, but the older BIOS is you can't flash. You have to actually buy a chip for $60. And these days, probably just best off buying a new computer anyway.
Check your motherboard specifications.
Yes, true. There's two back there.
I have a gator on my computer. It's snuck into it. How do I get rid of it?
You have a gator?
Yeah.
Well, part of that is if it's under control panels, you can remove it. But Adware will actually go through and remove Adware and spyware, and it actually handles gator pretty well. I think it finds about 15 different components, including registry keys. Oh, going back earlier about removing registry keys, if it's specifically Adware, Adware is your best bet because it cleans it and it's never caused any problems that I've seen.
Add-aware.
Mm-hmm. And I've used it on 30 computers at my workplace since I'm the IT manager there, and it actually speeds up the connection quite nicely.
Before I ask my question, there was a previous question about uninstalling programs.
Mm-hmm.
Tech TV had a report, discussion on that, and you might want to check out their website about how to uninstall, and there's some programs that they were offering or that they mentioned there. I didn't get I just got the latter half of the talk, so I don't have any more information on that. Mm-hmm. I just have one question. I use Proxometron to remove my ads and whatnot. Have you heard of it, and what do you think about them?
Proximitron, I've heard of it. Can you give me some specifics just to make sure we're on the same page?
Well, I've downloaded it, and it gives me a list of items I can remove. And so whenever I go to websites, mm-hmm. like, say, for example, the Washington Post, it just removes the ads. It'll have the word ad on there, and there's no flash, no pop-ups, nothing. It's just text, and that's it.
Hmm. Well, in terms of avoiding ads, that's good. Depending on the website, some of them get revenue based on the actual views. It would be nice if there was a program that they actually got credit for the picture, but you don't have to see it. But that would still slow down your connection. But it sounds like a good program. I haven't heard about it one way or another, which means that can't be that bad, because I usually find out how bad the programs are. But there are other programs you can actually have click on the ad, and it'll actually recognize that it's an ad. You basically click on this button, you click on that, and then it knows it's ad and blocks it from then on. What I actually did at work is we have a Linux firewall, actually Debian distribution. I actually set up the firewall to block x10.com and ads.doubleclick.net. I swear that gave us 5% faster connection right there. So you might even be able to set up your zone alarm equivalent to block anything from doubleclick.ads.doubleclick.net and x10.com, because those panning webcam pictures of women laying on couches was getting really really irritating.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
XP has a rollback function.
Mm-hmm.
Is that work? Is it a snapshot type thing, so you get back to the state you were in before?
If I understand correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't worked with XP much. Basically,
that's the intent. That's
right.
I don't know if Microsoft implemented it correctly.
Well, I've only got two computers on my network that are XP, so I haven't gotten much hands-on experience. I've been going more towards the Linux route since if you follow the news with Microsoft, they're basically getting taken away more and more of your freedoms. go through the end user's agreement, they can delete anything they want on your hard drive these days.
Well, supposedly it'll roll back to bad yeah. drivers and things like that, so it does sound workable. But that's why I wanted your opinion.
I've heard that it works. It does tend to take up a lot of room on the computer. It's basically it's saving part of your operating system to a different part of the hard drive. I usually try to keep a list of what drivers I need, because usually if you go to the website and get better drivers, that's usually the best way to go, because I trust the company that made it than the company that made the program, the operating system that has having trouble in the first place. But that's how it is.
My question is, some of these source sites that you have up here, any of these programs actually go through your computer and say, hey, I can remove this and this and this for you, instead of you having to hunt and peck each one? I mean, for us less savvy code manipulators, such as myself, that would be an ideal kind of program. I can just feed it in there. It does a search of my hard drive and says, you have this on here. Would you like this removed? Kind of like when you do a disk cleanup approach.
Ah, yes. Adaware is your best bet on that. It'll actually go through, scan your whole computer. It keeps track of programs installed, registry keys, you name it.
Should that be done on every time, every so often, like if you want to defrag your disk or something like that?
Sources page. Oh, okay. But basically, Adaware. I'm not sure if I have a link to Adaware in there, since everyone I know uses it. So, kind of just dismissed it as too obvious. That's what happens when you don't get out enough and get a fresh perspective.
Well, you said that a lot of these web providers and whatnot, they'll download the spyware or the cookies and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's automatic.
Right.
Now, the Adaware, does it take that into account? Do you have to, say, go through and clean up your system, if you will, from time to time, much the way you do to defrag your hard drive and whatnot? So.
Yeah, I would. Basically, I run it about once a month. And if I start having system problems, I'll run it every 2 weeks. Adaware actually update. You can actually get updates for it. But you can also set Adaware to run in the background real time, and so it'll remove. It'll ask you before it removes it, of course, because it might be a program you actually need. But I haven't seen any false positives yet, and I've been using it for about 6 months.
In answer to the question the gentleman had earlier about rollback. I haven't played with it on XP, but I know under ME it was pretty much worthless because it only replaced 4 files and not the actual registry file. It was io.sys, msdos.sys, command.com, I think, and there was one other file that I can't remember. But when I've had to roll back computers on ME, 1 out of 10 would work.
Well, to be fair to that feature, it was ME. I mean, that wasn't exactly a miracle of engineering there.
Oh, agreed. I have more troubles with ME, but I haven't had a chance to see what XP actually does, but I suspect it's the same thing because it's ME with the 2000 kernel.
Well, anything's better than ME, let's put it that way.
Yeah, agreed.
I think Windows 3.0 is better than Windows ME.
I don't know. I think it's more stable than ME.
That's pretty scary, but I do agree with that. Okay, one for you, and then.
You mentioned earlier browsing through a service or something like that as another alternative, where your IP, and I think you mentioned your email also, is kept out and not forwarded to. The sites that you visit.
Right.
Could you talk a little more about that, and also whether does that also block cookies and Adware and spyware?
Well, I believe those services are basically proxy services. You run through a proxy and whatnot, and it controls what's being sent out. Now, I believe that would also handle a lot of cookies, but as for spyware and adware, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. The state of the art keeps changing so much. Like Arialite program, a spyware adware program made by programmers in a country called Slovenia. Slovenia, I think. And they actually started trying to block adware. Their actual response was, if this program is dangerous, tell me. But until then, I consider it an illegal uninstaller. I disagree with that, because if the user is wanting to have it uninstalled, then he better let adware take care of it. Otherwise, that's some liability right there.
Well, then, can you mention any of the the intermediary browser services and that you might have heard are good or honest? In fact, I guess that comes to all of the sources. We figure, hey, the adware and spyware are the bad guys. People who say that they're blocking them are the good guys, but they're also in a position where they could. This may sound paranoid and something, but they're also in a position where they could get control over your hard disk just as easily. Have you heard of people masquerading as cleanup programs and not doing it, or masquerading as intermediaries and not doing it?
Not really, because people who download these programs, there's enough of them out there, they'll actually reverse engineer it, take a look at the source code, and there's enough eyes out there that they wouldn't want to do that, because the more angry people out there would slash your credit rating, mail them like boxes of roaches. You wouldn't want to anger the community like that.
And can you mention some of these intermediary services, because that sounds like a reasonable alternative from what you've said.
Anonymizer.com and what else? Kind of like the new TNN, but I'm not familiar with the cloak, but Anonymizer I've heard good things about. And there are also email services that give you throwaway email addresses. Basically, you can turn off the email address like that, which is handy if you actually have to give your email address out to some random site. Well, that's what Hotmail accounts are for. Let Microsoft pay for the bandwidth and the storage. I can afford it. Okay, one for you and one for you.
All right, I have two questions. Yeah. One, I have there's a file that keeps popping up on my computer even after I delete it and turn my computer off. When I turn it back on, it comes back. It's called System32. Now, this file is full of just ads. I don't know how it got there. And each time I delete it, it comes back after I turn my computer back on.
Oh, that's a very good question, actually. One point I forgot to cover. In your registry, there's actually a file called .hta. Basically, it's an automated script that it runs in startup and will actually reinstall files. Some of the more sophisticated ones will take themselves out of the registry whenever any other program runs, like something that scans for it, but then manages to put itself back into startup. They're very nasty. I would recommend the adware to scan for it, and also, if it's System32 with adware, I'd also recommend running a few antiviruses, because some of those adware ones have been classified as viruses now, like the JavaScript NoClose. Basically, those pop-up ads you mentioned, the ones that won't go away.
I use XP Home at my house, and there's I guess you could call it a misfeature But by default, it installs a some sort of server thing that lets Microsoft tech support have access to your computer. I think it's something like so you can look at the desktop. What?
Oh, she was just expressing her condolences.
I turned it off. Is there like a way to does Adware tell you about things like that that are part of the operating system?
Not that I'm aware of, but well, basically, no one program is your best solution, but mm-hmm. Adware is the closest one I've seen so far. Well, as for Microsoft, every time you download a security update, they can just reinstall the features. So,
well, they have an option where you can turn it off, but I don't know if it really works or not.
Well, considering that some of their future plans are monthly leases for Windows, and actual press releases have said that, and the end user agreements in some places, like security updates, will actually say they have the right to modify and delete data on your computer. I wouldn't trust them on that. Right. But even accounting for my bias against Microsoft, I wouldn't trust them. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I have Net Zero. Is that safe?
Net Zero. Do you have ads in there? To the best of my knowledge, Net Zero is okay, but they're trying to sell internet access for half the price, so their ethics may get replaced by desperation for survival. So they might resort to something.
I have premium, and it's less ads, but the ads are still there.
So you paid to have no ads, and the ads are still there?
Not as many, though.
Well, what I've found is this might apply to Net Zero, but a friend of mine had Juno, and the program was filled with ads and all that other garbage. Turns out if you go to My Computer and Dial-Up Connections, you can run the Juno connection directly without the Juno program and all the junk ads. So I would recommend going into Dial-Up Connections, because Net Zero has to have connection there, because that without a dial-up connection in that control panel, you don't get dial-up access. You can even make a shortcut to it on your desktop, or you can even set up your web browser to dial up that connection automatically. So all you got to do is double-click on your web browser or your email. That'd be under control panel and internet options. So, does that answer your question? Yes, ma'am.
Have you heard of the BDE projector, and do you have? Can you recommend a way how to get rid of it? Because I've had it on a computer and tried to remove it with Adware, and it did remove the program, but there was still the installer program on my computer left. So I found that when I did like a search for the file name.
What was that program again?
It was called the BDE projector.
BDE projector.
Yeah, it's. I looked it up on the web, and supposedly it's like a file sharing network that runs in the background that you don't know about, that some programs that are actually file sharing software come with that. BDE.
That's Bravo Delta Echo? Oh, I've never heard of that one, to be honest with you.
Adware removed it, but it left the installer behind, so it kind of like reinstalled itself.
Now, this installer program, does it install itself on startup? Or what is it, or is it just the installer program just sitting there on the computer?
I think it installs itself when you start up the program that it came with. Like, it came with some sort of freeware that was downloaded on the computer. Once you start that program, the installer installs this spyware, whatever it was.
Well, the problem is those are so tightly integrated into the program, it's almost impossible to rip it out. My recommendation is to find a non-Adware equivalent of that program, because there are plenty of people out there who'll do it for free and just for ego gratification or send them a postcard and that sort of thing. So I always say the best motivator is enlightened self-interest. So they get prove their programming mojo, and you don't have to worry about ads. So I say it's a win-win situation. Any other questions? Oh, does anyone have the time, by the way? Oh, goodness. I guess we're technically over. Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. And I'll be happy to answer any questions one-on-one up here if anyone has anything.